Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, what's good? What's going on? What is cool, everybody? You're here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the CHT on Sports and the head honcho for the Boxing Source media pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google Plus. Number to dial in to have your take on boxing talk. Right now is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the one key. You'll be able to get on cue, and you'll be on the show. We got like a few things that we are going to cover here this week. As we had the end of the first season of the World Boxing Super Series happen on Friday. And also, it had a couple of fights that were on ESPN Plus, so you'll be able to cover those things here in this show. Pretty much was a fairly busy evening on Friday. So pretty much gonna get into it. We're going to, start with what happened over in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Yep, that's right. Jeddah, Saudi Arabia hosted the final of the World Boxing Super Series in the super middleweight division. For those that were following the World Boxing Super Series, there was a, possibility that the final of the cruiserweight division for the World Boxing Super Series would have been held in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, but they ended up scrapping that plan and going with that final being in Moscow. So Jeddah, Saudi Arabia was, going to end up being the host there, and they ended up doing that, and you had the super middleweight championship, WBA super championship, that was on the line here in this particular matchup, as you had George Groves coming in at 27 wins and 4 losses. 28 wins and 3 losses, my bad, and came in there as the IBO and WBA champion, going up against Callum Smith. Callum Smith undefeated. There was coming out at 24-0 and held the World Boxing Council Diamond Super Middleweight title. No, it's not the actual championship, as you had David Benavidez as the WBC champion there at super middleweight. But, right now, He came in there as the guy undefeated, you know, tall guy, you know, 6'3", who got to the finals of the World Boxing Super Series by Goglin, and then in the semifinal, defeating Nicky Holzkin, who was a replacement for Jürgen Brahma. As Brahma couldn't fight in that semifinal due to an illness. And so Nicky Holzkin ended up defeating both of those guys by unanimous decision to reach the final. While you had George Groves, you know, having his fights against Jamie Cox, where he was able to score a knockout victory in the fourth round in that particular matchup, you know, due to a body shot. And then defeated Chris Eubank Jr., being unanimous decision, and then injuring his shoulder in the process. So what ended up happening was, with that injured shoulder, they couldn't have the finals of that match be when it was originally scheduled, because you had that injury that the Bulls had to deal with. So they had to push it back a few months for this final to take place. And so you had, like I was saying, the WBA champ George Groves going up against Callum Smith. And this was for the vacant Ring Magazine Super Middleweight Championship. So you had you know, these guys going up against each other for the top spot in the Ring Magazine rankings, being a Ring Magazine champion. That is what you'll be saw coming up into this particular matchup between these two guys. You know, going into it, you have, of course, you know, George Groves being the more seasoned fighter, you know, having the fights, of course, against Carl Froch for the Unified Super Middleweight Championships back in 2013 and 2014. You know, then kind of trying to build his way back into the top part of the super middleweight division, challenging for another super middleweight championship in 2015 against Badger Jack, ended up losing that one by a split decision in a, you know, very close match. Then after that, had his string of victories, you know, up until this particular point. And so he had the experience, he had the background, he had the world championship and a world championship fight experience going up against Callum Smith. Of course, you know, Callum Smith being the guy that was in his first world championship fight here against George Groves. So it was going to be something to where we kind of like looked at where Callum Smith would be as far as, like, you know, who, you know, how we would be able to perform in this type of atmosphere. Now, you know, with this kind of like being in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, I think that kind of, you know, took out a lot of the overall, I would say, build up one, and, you know, overall pressure that would be on probably either fighter. Because both of these guys are from the UK. You know, one would have thought that they would kind of like have this World Boxing Super Series final somewhere in the United Kingdom, but the people in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia invested a whole lot of money into this particular tournament just so they would have it, have the final right there in the Saudi Arabia. So this ended up being the culmination of all of that. So, and you know, this fight come together, and basically you had, you know, George Groves in there. I would say as the, you know, we kind of like saw the visibly saw the difference in the face-offs that they had with each other. As you saw that, you know, Colin Smith was, you know, the much taller fighter. And that was, you know, what George Groves had to look out for. So we tried to see what his range could be against Colin Smith. Kind of like point out his left jab, seeing if he could land with the left jab, get around Colin Smith's length and reach. But we had there in Callum, you know, Callum Smith, you know, taller, rangier fighter, was able to see if he could, you know, try to keep George Groves in distance. And that is what we kind of like saw within the first round or so, that, you know, we were trying to, their range against each other, so to speak. So, first round, of course, you have the customary filling out process between Callum Smith and George Groves. So, first round, you really didn't see, you know, that much where he kind of like either one kind of like got too much of an advantage in the first round. But coming to the close of that first round, you kind of like saw something what Colin Smith was looking for in his particular fight against George Groves. He was having his guard very high up, and you know, kind of like looking to see what George Groves was going to do with his left hand. And with George Groves, if he was going to be a little bit out of range with his left hand, with the left jab, then Colin Smith was going to come back with the right, with the overhand right. And so, pretty much near the end of that first round, you had Colin Smith land that right hand on George Groves, that had George Groves stumble a little bit, be a little bit off balance, and kind of like step back a few steps before the end of round one. Round two, you kind of like the game plan would have been for George Groves, kind of like trying to measure Callum Smith, look at him, try to part the jab, and then throw a couple of combinations, and then, you know, get away from Callum Smith's attack when Smith tried to do so. But by doing that, you kind of like back yourself into the ropes. Don't, you know, move in and out of the pocket. Don't move laterally. You didn't move sideways. So he kind of like was making himself a sitting target for Callum Smith there in the second round. You did, you know, have a little part where George Groves tried to incorporate his strategy as he saw Callum Smith with a very high guard. So he said, okay, if you have that high guard, I'm going to try to see if I can get to the body, jab to the body, and, you know, see if I can slow you down a little bit, and then eventually get that high guard to drop a little bit more so I'll be able to score with a few overhand rights here and there. So that was George Groves' plan going into the third round, seeing if he could do a couple of jabs to the body and then, you know, eventually come over the top with the right hand. But Kyle Smith was saying, you know, a little bit patient, patient there in the ring. And, you know, in round three, you saw what basically happened throughout the course of the fight. You saw Kellum Smith throwing that right hand, and once he hit Groves flush with that right hand, then Groves was basically in trouble. In the third round, he stumbled back and got back to the ropes, and, you know, Kellum Smith tried to, you know, throw a flurry on George Groves while he was on the ropes, but he didn't really land all that much, and Groves was able to throw back a little bit through there. So we got through that part in round three, and then, you know, and you kind of like saw that being the theme out there for Kellum Smith throughout this particular fight. Let me see if I could try to add in another caller here. Just bear me for one moment as I add them in here. Area code 205, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? It's Mike Grady. How you doing?
Doing good. You know, just going through the review of the super middleweight fight between George Groves and Kellum Smith that was the final of the World Boxing Super Series. You know, halfway through the fight, we kind of like seeing what the theme was for this fight between Groves and Smith. You had Groves trying to see what he could do in range, or pretty much at range, against the taller and rangier fighter. But he eventually was getting caught a few times with the right hand of Kellum Smith, and he got hurt. He got pretty much hurt in the third round, and that kept being the theme throughout the fight. Groves getting hit with the right hand in the third round, the fourth round, and, you know, came back a little bit in the fourth and the fifth, you know, throwing the jabs to the body once again and trying to get Kellum Smith's guard to drop down a little bit so he could score over the top. But then in the seventh, he got caught with the left hook after, you know, throwing the right hand. And that left hook, you know, pretty much had him off balance and stunned him. And, you know, Kellum Smith ended up taking advantage, throwing a flurry while Groves was through the ropes. And then eventually hit him with that right hook to the body that put Groves to the canvas. And he ended up having a full 10 count. To end the fight, and Kellum Smith ends up with that WBA Super Championship in the super middleweight division and the Ring Magazine Championship as the top guy right now at super middleweight, or ranked number one at super middleweight by Ring Magazine. So your thoughts on Kellum Smith getting the win over George Groves?
So I watched the fight, but I did not watch it critically enough to, I need to watch it again to actually assess Kellum Smith's, like, where I think he's at, and to assess, like, how well I think George Groves did. Like, I watched it, but I was doing other things and, you know, like, in the middle of other stuff, so I couldn't, like, really, you know, critically assess it. But what I will say, the hook over whatever punch that George Groves threw, that was beautiful. Like, watching that hook, like, go right behind the punch that Groves threw. I think it was a right hand. He threw a crook right behind the right hand that Groves threw. That was a beautiful punch. And whatever punch that made him go down for the second time, it made George Groves quit because, you know, he was coherent. Well, he verbalized that he didn't want anymore. Like, the count was
right
at, like, 7 or 8 or something. And he was like, nah, I'm straight. I don't want no more. And he looked at his corner and was like, down on the apron. They weren't even on the apron. They was, like, on the floor by the apron. And he was like, no, I'm straight. I don't want no more. And then that's when the ref was, like, you know, calling it off or whatever. So, hey, I think I need to reevaluate Callum Smith and see how good I actually think he is in comparison to the other guys. But I think it's good that he has the belt because I'm pretty sure he'll fight the other guys. He'll fight maybe Adonis Stevenson. He'll fight, you know, these other guys.
Yeah, the thing with, you know, Callum Smith is, you know, he kind of came up in the ranks. He was, you know, waiting for, you know, a particular shot to, you know, fight for a world championship. Was, you know, having a lot of fights over in Liverpool, England, where, you know, in his home area. He had, you know, a few fights where he was part of the, you know, larger card, like the Gennady Golovkin Kell Brook card. He was part of that one in 2016. So, you know, maybe, you know, people could kind of like see what he would be able to do. He did get the WBC silver super middleweight championship in that particular fight. You know, other than that, you just kind of like seen him, you know, kind of like being under the radar over there in the UK side. So once he was able to be, you know, into the tournament here, you know, against, you know, starting off against Eric Skoglund, then they kind of like put him, you know, I think he was able to choose Eric Skoglund, but I'm not sure. Because he might have been like the four seed into this, but I don't think he really was. I think they had him as a two seed. So I think he picked Skoglund second in that round robin tournament of sorts, or the bracket, because George Groves was the first seed, so he got the first pick. And then Callum Smith got the second pick as far as, like, who he would be able to fight in the tournament. So he was able to do that, get through that particular fight, then had his semifinal fight against Nicky Holsken, since Jürgen Brammer wasn't able to perform in the semifinal. And then he, you know, gets his shot here against, you know, more experienced George Groves, and kind of, like, showed that he was the you know, younger, more talented fighter out there. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see what he's going to be able to do there in the super middleweight division, given that, you know, you still have, like, a lot of guys out there that, you know, are holding titles. You have, you know, Gilberto Ramirez with the WBO belt, Jose Uscategui as the IBF champion, and, you know, I'll talk about him a little bit later in the show, and David Benavidez there with the WBC belt, and we kind of like knew what happened with David Benavidez and his little, you know, out of the ring dealings, so to speak. So you don't really have much of a, you know, I would say a very deep division there at super middleweight. So, you know, maybe, you know, he could do something there at 168 pounds. He might have a defense in his home, you know, home area against Rocky Fielding, who won the WBA regular title earlier this year. So that is a, you know, intermediate possibility as a fight coming on down the line at 168 pounds. Yeah. That was, you know, kind of like most of the things that I saw out there was, you know, Callum Smith being the, you know, larger fighter, and George Groves trying to make adjustment to someone who was, you know, much taller than he is. But, you know, he couldn't, you know, overcome the four inch height advantage and the reach advantage that Callum Smith did have. So that's something there. One of the things that I did see in this particular card on the zone was in the Pro feature belt, they had Chris Eubank Jr. In there in his first fight back after his loss to George Groves against J.J. McDonough. And, you know, yeah, Chris Eubank kind of like, you know, execute what he was able to execute. Didn't really, you know, I would say do that much to really hurt J.J. McDonough. But after three rounds, the fight got stopped as McDonough retired in his corner saying that he hurt his shoulder. And the post-fight comments were kind of like funny between Chris Eubank Jr. and J.J. McDonough because, you know, Eubank Jr. was saying, you know, hey, I mean, this is part of boxing. You know, kind of like fight to the end. You know, at least try to get through all of that. You know, I've hurt my shoulder before. I've had injuries before, and I still fought. So why couldn't you do it? And then McDonough caught an attitude and almost seemed like he wanted to fight him right after the thing. And I was like, that was funny to me. But, you know, with Chris Eubank Jr., he kind of like is a you know, another guy that could contend for a world title, but it looks like he's going for another fight at the super middleweight division later this year against former IBF champ, former champ there, James Gale. So that's kind of like something that we'll be looking out for to see if that fight becomes official. Mike, what do you think about that potential matchup, Eubank versus DeGale?
Box and win an easy fight. I think that would be more of an interesting fight than, say, like anybody else who would box and move against. Does DeGale jab well enough? Like, does he have a good jab to keep people off like that? Because doesn't he get into, like, firefights where people be hitting him and stuff?
Yeah, sometimes he does kind of, like, fall into that trap with many of his opponents. He did that in his first fight against, Caleb Truax, which to me kind of, like, ended up being his downfall and, you know, why he ended up losing that particular fight. So,
and Bobby Jeff beat him like that too, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's what pretty much got him, you know, messed up in their draw fight in 2017, there at the beginning of 2017. He kind of like boxed. He was like boxing fairly well at that first half of the fight. But then once he slowed down, that's when Badu Jack kind of like caught up to him and, you know, ended up breaking him down. And that was like that's what almost, you know, put him out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think with that being said, Badu Jack knows how to jab and also, you know, like takes people's body away from him. So Chris Eubank is nowhere near Badu Jack in terms of like skill level and the ability to use a full arsenal to break someone down. Chris Eubank seemed to only throw hooks and stuff, which if you get a person who knows how to box and move, that's very easy to defend against. Like if all you're doing is throwing long passes, you know, I know which defense to be, you know, so. I don't know. I think that's interesting because Chris Eubank, the way he fights, can get beat easily. But then, yeah, DeGale sometimes does not, like, handle things like that well. And he, like, puts himself in seemingly worse positions than he should be in, from what I could say. So I think it's an interesting fight. I would be interested to see.
Yeah, it's like he kind of like turns on a switch saying that, oh, I have to fight up close and I have to, you know, be in a slugfest with my opponent. And I don't think that would be a good, you know, very much a very good idea against Chris Eubank. That would kind of like give Chris Eubank a better chance of, you know, getting a better result.
Yeah, exactly.
Eubank is somebody where, like you were saying, he you know, didn't really look for his jab that much in his fight against George Groves, and that kind of like cost him the fight against Groves, because if he was able to set more things up with his jab, then he'd be able to connect more and land more with, you know, his power punches against Groves, and then you would have pulled that out and been in that World Boxing Super Series final, but he wasn't able to do that. So it's almost like he doesn't execute a plan B when plan A is failing. So, you know, here against James Gale, James Gale just, you know, sticks to, you know, boxing and, you know, trying to stay out of range of Chris Eubank's power punches, then he will be able to pull off the win against Chris Eubank Jr. All right, now.
Unless Chris Eubank Jr. Changes up and learns how to jab and use the jab, then, yeah, I would put my money, and I would imagine DeGale would be the favorite.
Yeah, he would be the prohibitive favorite in that matchup. Not sure, but James DeGale may be in action here on Fox Sports 1 here pretty soon, as we have this card in Ontario, California. Let me see. I was like seeing how long this is, but yeah, they got like prelims going on right now. And then, you know, here at 9 o'clock Eastern time, you'll have the main event, Brandon Figueroa against Oscar Escandon on Fox Sports 1. Of course, we know what the main event was supposed to be, but that main event got scrapped due to Victor Ortiz being arrested for assault charges. So that's why we have Oscar Escandon in the main event here on Fox Sports 1. For those that are listening in live, you can call in to have your take on boxing, 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Now, also on Friday, I would say Friday night, this was on what was it, like ESPN Plus. You had two I would say co-feature bouts or two co-main events that were on, as you had the IBF super middleweight champion in action, Jose Uzcategui, going up against Ezequiel Moderna. Was not for the IBF title that Uzcategui had, so with that being the case, he could come in at basically any way he wanted, any weight he wanted to, and ended up being about the, you know, 175 pound weight limit against Ezequiel Moderna, who came in at 26-4, from Argentina, had a majority of his boxing matches in Argentina. He lost to Thomas Usyk, former super middleweight champ, back in 2013, and was knocked out by current light heavyweight champion Artur Beterbiev. So he's kind of like been floating around super middleweight and light heavyweight over the course of his professional career, going up against Jose Uzcategui, who, you know, did have his two fights against Andre Durrell. His first fight was last year at the DMV area, where, of course, you know about what happened at the end of that fight. He was able to get a rematch against Andre Durrell over at the Barclays Center earlier this year, and basically beat Andre Durrell to a pulp out and have that fight stop. So
It was just, to me, it was almost like a almost like an exhibition match of sorts, because nobody was really paying much attention or giving it that much leeway. So you just had it was category nearly shut out Moderna out there through 10 rounds. So he had two scores of 100-90 and, one score of 98-92. But he just couldn't, really knock out his opponent there. So he kind of like him. He was able to improve his record to 28 wins and 2 losses, and kind of like puts his name out there in the super middleweight division to see who else will be able to face him. You do have Caleb Plant out there as the highest ranked contender for that IBF title, and a lot of people will probably need to see what Caleb Plant could do at that level. He's kind of like been brought up slowly in the ranks at a super middleweight. So we're kind of like seeing if he's going to be able to step up and, finally face a, title holder in Jose Uzcategui right there. What are your thoughts about Uzcategui and, him in this super middleweight division?
So I didn't see the fight, but from knowing how he fights, and, his pressure style, it's interesting that he didn't knock someone out unless the person was good enough to not get knocked out. I think that's interesting to me that he didn't knock the person out, personally speaking. In terms of a possible match between him and Caleb Plant, I don't know if Caleb Plant hit hard enough. Like, I would have to honestly see how Plant keeps somebody off of him. And, if he can keep him off of him, then the fight will be interesting. But if he can't keep him off of him, sort of like how Andre Durrell couldn't keep him off of him, then Uzcategui will have a field day, sort of.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on how Caleb Plant, how his power translates. Because Caleb Plant could probably box around what's-his-name, and then, Caleb Plant is a very – he can think in the ring and stuff, too. So you can tell he's a cerebral-ish type boxer, but it just depends on how much respect he gets from the guy.
Yeah, that's the thing about it is that, Jose Uzcategui is there for, opponents to, hit him. It's just that you got to be able to be ready for what he's going to go throw back at you. He has a lot behind his punches. So if you're not able to, take what Uzcategui is going to be able to give to you, then he's going to eventually break you down and take you out. A fight between him and Caleb Plant would be very interesting, as you're saying, because of the way that Caleb Plant kind of like, boxes against his opponents. He's not like a, razzle-dazzle type of guy in this particular weight class. In the comparison, you had Rogelio Medina or Porky Medina fight Benavidez and, fight Caleb Plant. And Benavidez got like one of the, most exciting knockouts on Rogelio Medina, while Caleb Plant, basically was outboxing to, a decision win there. So that's kind of like what, we're kind of like going to look for in that potential matchup between each other. Got another caller in here, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Hey, just real quick, in regards to the – I just wanted to tell any of your conversation in regards to his category. I was doing some brief reading this weekend, and he basically made a statement where it said he does say that nobody else can match up with him at his weight class at 168. Just if you can clarify something for me real quick, plus the fight from this weekend, George Groves and I think Callum Smith, aren't those two guys at 168, please?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, and that's just kind of interesting that someone makes a declaration. For one, he has yet to clean out the division, and there are definitely other champs in there. And, of course, we will also love to see a unification. So there's definitely some work to do. And it's not, even though his category is definitely rough and tough, we saw him just rough up Darrell last year and things like that and take him out and get himself into the position we're in right now. But all in all, it makes us interesting to talk at 168, particularly with the result of the final with Groves and Smith. So definitely some interesting fights coming up.
Yeah. And that's what we got, you know, going down at 168 pounds. You know, with Callum Smith's victory over George Groves, getting that WBA super championship at super middleweight. And then the Usyk category currently holding that IBF title. And then you have Gilberto Zoto Ramirez. They're still with the WBO title, but kind of like seems that he's cool and he's okay with, you know, fighting guys that, you know, Top Rank gives him. I think he may have another fight there against Jesse Hart. So that might be another thing to look for in that super middleweight division there. But with Callum Smith, as I was saying, like earlier in the show when I was covering the fight between him and George Groves, he did say that he wanted to, you know, have a title defense near his, you know, hometown of Liverpool, and he could do that against the WBA regular champion, Rocky Fielden, who, you know, recently got that belt over Tyron Zouge this year. So that is what seems to be the landscape of the super middleweight division right now. Also, part of that card was a title bout that did take place, as you had Yuren Ancajas, you know, defend his title, the IBF super flyweight title, against Alejandro Berrios. So Ancajas was there 30 wins, one loss and one draw, you know, being the IBF super flyweight champion. He has been that champ since 2016 with his win over Miguel Arroyo. And he has had like a couple of good wins over the course of his reign. He did defeat undefeated Jamie Conlon at the NCC Arena in Belfast by TKO, and you know, a few months earlier had his win over Jones Sultan by unanimous decision over in Fresno. So him going up against Berrios, you know, Mexican fighter there, that was kind of like floating around there in the ranks in the super flyweight division, but he was like having these fights over in Mexico, where in 2016 he fought someone that was winless or had six losses, and that's pretty much it. And he did it again in 2017, fighting Oscar Talia, who had no wins and 11 losses, and fought someone in Efrain Gonzalez who had three wins, 23 losses, and one draw. So that's kind of a, you know, what they would say as a cupcake schedule in football terms. You basically had a cupcake schedule in the boxing ring when it came to Alejandro Berrios there in 2016 and 2017. But in 2018, he was able to fight Jose Martinez, who was undefeated at 20-0-1, and that was a split draw, and that
I guess, put him in place to fight Yoren Ankaas over in Oakland, and that ended up being a very close fight between those two, and that resulted in a split draw there. So Ankaas ended up keeping his belt, but ended up with a split draw against his opponent there in the super flyweight division. And as we see, we have, like, you know, guys like Donnie Nieto still out there at super flyweight, Big Williams Arroyo, Khalid Yafai, and of course, Sorung Vasai, Chocolatito Gonzalez, and Juan Francisco Estrada. Well, we don't know about Chocolatito, but we do have Chocolatito that did have his fight there in that undercard of Canelo Golovkin too. So, you know, with that, that kind of like puts, you know, Chocolatito back in the mix a little bit in that super flyweight division. So he may get another shot at a super flyweight championship, maybe against Yoren Ankaas there. So any thoughts about the status of the super flyweight division now after, you know, Superfly 3 took place and you had Chocolatito come back a couple of weeks ago, and now with Yoren Ankaas getting this draw in his defense of that IBF super flyweight title?
Yeah, my main thought is just from like a couple weeks ago when Chocolatito coming back. Once again, we know he's tailed at one point as the number one pound-for-pound fighter, which definitely doesn't happen too often for someone being in the low weight class like he is. We know what happened with him in regards to a couple of fights with not trying to say this guy's name, but then got from Thailand and everything. So I think that's the most compelling story at flyweight for me, to see if he can come back to who he once was. But even in the midst of all that, there's a whole lot going on with the division, and it's not going to be easy for him to come back, given the plethora of names that you just mentioned within that class. So lots of activity going on downstairs in flyweight.
Yeah, there's, you know, I would say a good 5 or 6 fighters that are, you know, pretty much close to each other as far as, like, either, you know, ability or, you know, power is concerned at super flyweight, to where, you know, it would be very competitive. You could get a good few competitive fights out there at super flyweight. Like I said, you know, Estrada's still out there. Sorung Vasai is there. Khalid Yafai, you know, fairly skilled guy that has the WBA belt. And Yoren Ankaas out there. So, we'd like to see, you know, probably how this super flyweight division will kind of like shape itself out. But, you know, right now, you know, we still have Sorung Vasai as the top guy there. Not sure where I would put Ankaas as far as like that overall, you know, I would say list there for super flyweight, but you probably, you know, kind of like say that he would want to step up against the likes of those guys, and Sorung Vasai, Chocolatito Gonzalez, and you know, Kazuto Ioka from Japan. Any thoughts on the super flyweight division, Mike?
I think there are some interesting matchups. I did not see the fight the other day, but there appear to be some interesting matchups that would be interesting to see.
Yep.
That's all I have.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's almost like with K2 Promotions, if it isn't, you know, with K2 Promotions doing those Superfly cards, you really won't, you know, I would say find out about much of these super flyweight fights, because most of them will probably be, you know, overseas, like over in Japan or maybe in the Philippines or something like that. So
that's, you know, kind of like what we're looking for in that particular division. But, you know, with other things that are going on, these other tournaments that are going to be starting up, particularly in the bantamweight division, you know, one weight class above that, you know, we're going to see more interest towards the bantamweight division than the junior bantamweight division coming up in the next 6 to 12 months out there. For those that are listening in live through the link and want to get in on the boxing talk, you call in at 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Another thing that happened on Friday night was, you know, we a fight card on Showbox, Showtime over in Temecula, California. And this one had a, you know, a few good fights there on the undercard over in Temecula, California. But the main event here was the IBF North American Lightweight Championship, as Devin Haney was coming in there 19-0 against Juan Carlos Burgos. Devin Haney, undefeated, you know, one of the young guys that, you know, has garnered a lot of attention inside and outside of the ring. For those that don't know, Devin Haney had been involved, so to speak, with a model, Black China. And I'm like, how? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know how that whole thing came about. But Devin Haney there at lightweight, pretty much trying to become a contender around that weight class, going up against Juan Carlos Burgos. Burgos didn't have a fight since last year, going up against Hector Garcia. Was, you know, floating around the super featherweight division, but his last fight was at lightweight. He was kind of like, I think, still around that weight class, but, you know, over in Mexico, he fought, you know, guys before Hector Garcia. He fought guys that were 8-26 and 1-5 before losing by unanimous decision to Mikey Garcia back in 2014. As far as like inactivity is concerned, that's pretty much what you had there with Juan Carlos Burgos. But Devin Haney was out there, and I guess the expectation was that he was going to, you know, show up and show out against the, you know, guy in Burgos. But Burgos was, you know, a very tough, you know, very tough opponent. Somebody who had never been stopped in his professional career. You know, he wasn't stopped by Mikey Garcia. He didn't get stopped back in 2010. You know, it was going to be a very, very tough fight, but this is something to where we kind of like looked at what Devin Haney was going to be doing there in the ring. And for me, if I had like a very high expectation of Devin Haney going up against Juan Carlos Burgos, specifically, you know, what Burgos was doing leading up into this fight, you would probably be, you know, a little bit disappointed in Devin Haney's performance. He did, you know, have a couple of instances where he left himself open to some right hands from Juan Carlos Burgos, and, you know, something to where he, you know, kind of like didn't follow up on Burgos where when he had Burgos in trouble, or it didn't seem like he looked for a particular punch that would, you know, land often on Juan Carlos Burgos. And so the fight ended up going the full 10 rounds. And Devin Haney ended up winning it by unanimous decision, pretty much getting like a shutout victory in there. So Devin Haney goes to 20-0, gets a minor lightweight championship there by the IBF, and probably goes up in the ranks in the lightweight division for, you know, the IBF. So that's kind of what we saw right there. Any quick thoughts about Devin Haney up to this particular point of his career?
I haven't watched him fight that much, so no comment from me.
Gotcha. Anything from you, Terrell, before I follow up with Devin Haney and his, like, where he could go in his pro career?
Yeah, not a whole lot right now. I'm trying to say, well, like, I haven't seen this guy fight, because I actually made mention of him a few months ago when I saw him on social media, where he made some kind of declaration that he's, like, the next Mayweather or something like that, particularly with the bling and stuff like that. And I know you recall that. I was like, who is this going to, if he's supposedly that, why haven't I heard of him as at this point? And I do believe he does fight on the Mayweather banner, I believe. I'm sure you're correct me if I'm wrong. But, there's some sense of buzz on him. But at the same time, I didn't get to see this fight. I'm definitely going to watch get this fight in this weekend. But when you have that type of buzz around you, you have to have that you got to be able to fight and have a fan-friendly fight on top of that. And so if you're going to walk the walk, you got to be able to talk the talk. So it's kind of disappointing, like you said, in just hearing your summary of the fight in regards to his performance. But like I said, even though he's against a tough guy in Burgos who's never been knocked down and things like that, like I said, if you want to talk the talk, you better walk the walk if you want to have that type of buzz around you. And particularly in this this lightweight class, where there's some people out there within that division. So you better back it up, you know, back it up.
Yeah, the thing with Devin Haney is that he has been, you know, around the Mayweather gym fairly often. He was, you know, kind of like under the tutelage of Floyd Sr. For part of his career. So, you know, I would say that, you know, he kind of like had all of that attention and, you know, all of the hoopla that surrounded Mayweather Boxing Gym. I think it kind of like went to his head a little bit. He has a lot of talent, but he has to be able to hone in all of those talents and bring it all together. We see, you know, a good number of these guys that have a lot of talent and then make a little run there, you know, being undefeated and coming up the ranks and things like that. But, you know, once all of that attention gets to them too much, then they kind of like delve away from what got them the attention in the first place. And once that ends up happening and then they get matched up by or matched up against a guy that has a lot of experience that, you know, can take a punch and, you know, could probably be a good counterpuncher and study their opponent, then they end up getting, you know, I would say, you know, they would pretty much get stopped in their tracks. So it's either they end up having a very tough fight or they end up losing that fight.
One thing, just take a look back in time. You guys remember the guy from England. What's his name? Prince Ahmed Jr., right?
Yep. That's him, Ahmed.
So, yep. So he's definitely a prince, whatever, had so much buzz around him. From his ring appearances, things like that, his flashy style, fighting with his hands down, awkward style, stuff like that. And once he finally jumped into the ring with an actual solid fighter in Marco Antonio Barrera, we know it's a different story from that point. Now, Haney is not definitely at that level yet of Prince Amir Jr., we know that. But it's just kind of a similar story to where you want to have that style, that facade, and stuff like that. But if you don't have the substance and the foundations of boxing, within you, ingrained within your style at this level, it's going to catch up to you and everything. So, and one thing to consider too in this particular generation of social media fame, things like that. Like for example, this past weekend, although it's a footnote, but we do see it matters in this generation, where the rapper Black China was at his fight, and you kind of know what the thoughts were born with that. It's like, why is she doing that? What is she doing there with him? Is this full attention on the fight? Does she think he's already made it? You know, because Black China's at his fight with him or whatever. So this things like that. You know, this is a whole new generation, So real funny to see.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of like seeing that. We're talking about this here with Devin Haney and Black China. You had, like, you know, guys like, you know, Gervonta Tank Davis, who, you know, at one point was hanging around Trina, and, you know, what it was at the beginning of September, you know, at the Danny Garcia, Sean Porter card, you know, you had Tank Davis floating around Barclays Center, you know, on pretty much all tipsy and whatnot, and, you know, hanging around, you know, older chicks or models and things like that. So, you know, kind of like that's what we're kind of like seeing here with a lot of these younger guys that have a lot of talent and kind of like see the superstar potential that they could have, you know, while being in the boxing game. But, you know, they just got to stay focused and stay on their game, or else they're going to, you know, fall into the trap. So hopefully that doesn't happen with Devin Haney here as he goes up in the ranks at the lightweight division there. They actually just stepped into the overtime session of the show. And here I'll go into someone who was a former lightweight world champion that did have his fight on Facebook Live. And it's still available on Facebook through the Golden Boy Boxing Channel. And that is Jorge Linares, who is the former WB, you know, pretty much the WBC Diamond Champion, or former WBA lightweight champion, going up against Abner Cotto. And this particular fight here against Abner Cotto was, you know, at super lightweight. It wasn't at lightweight. So, you know, I would say that Jorge Linares didn't really have to kind of like come down and weight or anything like that. He kind of put himself as a guy in the super lightweight division. And here against Abner Cotto, even though Abner Cotto had like a string of victories coming up into this particular fight, it was, you know, whole different animal going up against Jorge Linares, who's one of the most experienced guys there in the lightweight and super lightweight divisions. And you saw that early and often there by Jorge Linares. He was able to drop Abner Cotto early in their fight. Pretty much it didn't even last that long as far as I was concerned. As you had, you know, Linares being able to knock down Abner Cotto, and that was, you know, pretty much the beginning of the end there for Cotto. And then he was able to knock him down again, or knock Abner Cotto down again in round three. And it looked like Cotto was, you know, pretty much okay there in round three. But Linares was able to stay focused in there, get Cotto, you know, up into the ropes, and then had a fairly questionable left hand land. And then Cotto kind of like saw that it was fairly low, that it was like on the belt. And then he looked at the referee, seeing if the referee was going to say something. And the referee ain't say nothing.
And so Jorge Linares ended up taking advantage and got him into a flurry and everything like that and got him to the ropes. And eventually, Cotto and Linares ended up, down on the ropes or whatever it was. And, once they got through all of that, then Cotto got up and stumbled yet again. And then that pretty much signaled the end of the fight there in the third round. So Jorge Linares got a third round TKO victory over Abner Cotto to get back into his winning ways out there. And now it's just basically what we are going to see there by Linares in the super lightweight division, if he stays at the super lightweight division, or if he comes back down the lightweight and, waits out to see what happens with the titles there at lightweight, because you have Mikey Garcia as the WBC and IBF lightweight champion with, mandatories there that are due with Richard Comey for the IBF and Luke Campbell for the WBC, or with what happens between the unification fight that's going to take place December 8th between Vasyl Lomachenko and Jose Pedraza over in New York City. So there's a lot to sort out at lightweight and also a lot to sort out at super lightweight, since we have the World Boxing Super Series and the super lightweight division starting this year. So any thoughts on Jorge Linares?
Yeah, but real quick, I didn't get to see the fight. I'm going to report more check out tonight. You said it's definitely on Golden Boys Facebook, so I think that's what you should check that out real quick tonight. But, I mean, I'm just glad to see him get back in his winning ways. And the thing about it, the super lightweight division, as we already know, is definitely kind of devoid of a solid presence. And I think that Linares can definitely be that presence at 140. For one, number one, he's not small for the class. So that bodes well for him. And two, and kind of like what we just talked about the last couple weeks at 140, since Terrence Crawford's gone from there now, that class is still trying to find itself and find a dominant person within that division. So I'm trying to think of the guy that we saw a couple weeks ago that we talked about that won this fight. What's the guy's name that put on ESPN? Tall, ranked kid out of California. He switched trains to Garcia. What's his name?
Who? He trains with Mikey Garcia?
Yeah, changed trains to Robert Garcia from Freddie Roach. That's it. 140, right?
Oh.
That kid at 140?
I thought so, but I may be mistaken as far as like what, where it is. Can't really like recall it right now. Offhand.
Yeah, he's still at 140. Like he was with Freddie Roach, switched to Robert Garcia as his trainer, and defended his belt on ESPN a couple weeks ago. I guess the guy was, 27? I forgot. Name will come up to me right now. But like I said, with Linares, he's good just size for the division and can definitely make a mark. But, I don't know. I mean, he's already been 135, and like you suggest, he could just be sitting back waiting to see what happens with the titles at 135 with Garcia, with Loma, people like that, and possibly move back down. But at the same time, if you find a new home at 140, you find a new home. So it would make sense for him to stay there. So because there's fights there, and next to that division is still looking to assimilate itself and look for their top contender in that division. So I would like him to stay there.
True. It would, for Linares, he would be a key addition for the super lightweight division. But like I said, there's still a few fights that he could have at lightweight where it would be fairly lucrative for him, or something where he could kind of like still be contending for the top spots there at lightweight. There also could be another rematch between Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell, because Luke Campbell did
fight him to a split decision in their fight. So, I mean, if Luke Campbell could fight Von Mendy once again, then, you know, maybe, you know, his fights against they'll be able to have a Lenarius Campbell rematch. Probably over in the UK, but I don't know if Jorge Lenarius will be interested in anything over in the UK after having that close decision here over in stateside. Mike Grady, any thoughts on Jorge Lenarius?
I saw, I guess, one of the knockdowns. I just looked at it on YouTube and seemed like he was going to the body from what I could see, and then, you know, was mesmerizing him to the body, then came up top with a straight shot, and Cotto didn't see it. So, yeah, I mean, Linares is a very skillful guy. I think that he beats anybody not named Lomachenko. He beats most people not named Lomachenko. Very skillful guy. I think he got all the tools to be a real competitor against, you know, most people. I don't know who he would be facing, but I think if you name most names, he probably could beat him. Who would he be facing other than Lomachenko?
At lightweight, I'd say a rematch against Luke Campbell, possibly Richard Comey over there at lightweight, Anthony Crolla, possibly. And, you know, Ray Beltran's still around there too. So even though he did lose the WBO belt, he still, you know, was a contender there at the lightweight division.
Okay.
There you go. I just noticed something here on Ring Magazine. In the lightweight ratings here, well, they have, you know, Vasyl Lomachenko as the champion at lightweight. And at number 10, they actually put Devin Haney there at number 10. I ain't even noticed that. That's crazy. They got Devin Haney out there at number 10 as the 10th ranked lightweight. So that's, you know, fairly interesting out there. So, you know, one more thing here we got is the currently what's going on right now on Fox Sports 1. You have like a, you know, fight card with, you know, the main event that was supposed to be on there was, what it was, Victor Ortiz, who was supposed to fight in the main event, going up against, he was like gonna face John Molina Jr., but that ended up being canceled due to Victor Ortiz's recent charge for rape. That was those things came up from earlier this year. So Victor Ortiz ended up turning himself in to the Oxnard Police Department, and he was like booked on 3 charges of felony sexual assault. So that, I mean, that's like, yeah, really, that's really big right there, because they said that the incident came from March, and the police was like investigating it since, you know, March or April. So I kind of like find that weird that they would have a fight made, you know, between Victor Ortiz and John Molina Jr. when that investigation was still going on. So that didn't make much sense to me. So as a result, the original co-feature bout between Brandon Figueroa and former featherweight world championship contender Oscar Escandone will be the main event, as that part of the card is going to start at around 9 p.m. Eastern time. So we'll be able to check that fight out. And they're going to have Joe Joyce be part of this fight card too. And he's going to go up against Iago Calazze in this fight. And it'll be Joe Joyce's first fight, over in the stateside and being training under Big Bear California through Abel Sanchez there. So that's what we're looking forward to here on the Fox Sports 1 card. Anything that y'all are looking for in this particular card?
No, just a continued development of Joe Joyce. We can see where he's at. His nickname, the Juggernaut, things like that. Comes in at 6'6", around, 250, 260, something like that. So we're just looking for to see him develop. It's kind of funny. He had tried to get a matchup with Derek Chisora, turned him down. I think he also saw the matchup with Big Baby Miller, too, who also turned him down. Because no one wants to be on the wrong side of a win against a prospect. So, I mean, that's one of the most interesting names out there right now as far as on the lower levels of the heavyweight division. Real quick, what's this also just a Nigerian kid, heavyweight? I forgot his name.
This is going to be Efe Ajagba's fight here after, being in a fight card a month ago against Curtis Harper where, Curtis Harper at the start of the first round just said, hey, bump this man, I'm out. Peace out. Y'all ain't paying me right. Think I'm going to go through this fight? Nah, son, I'm out.
And I don't think I've never seen that in boxing. Correct me if I'm wrong. Have you ever seen that before?
Well, I haven't seen it before, but the funny thing is that I think it was last week or something. This was this is over in Las Vegas. This was part of the Mayweather promotions card or something like that, right? So I guess somebody else, somebody was in a fight. And it was like the second or third round, and he ended up getting knocked down. Then after he got up, the referee was counting, it was like 6, 7, 8. And he was like, nah, man, nah, nah, nah. And he just went on head over to the corner, and he stepped through the ropes, and he went down off the ring and walked out. He was like, nah, I ain't taking this no more. And so, I didn't see it before, but I saw it again. So, hey, there you go. So, So Efe Ajagba will probably be around the beginning of this card here starting at 9 o'clock. Guy 6'5", with an 88-inch reach going up against Nick Jones there, who's a, pretty much shorter shorter guy going up against Ajagba. So first of all, we should hope that Nick Jones got properly paid in this thing here too. So that's something that you gotta figure out. And actually, the thing with Curtis Harper, I think part of that backstory is that Curtis Harper was trained, if I'm not mistaken, by Nate Campbell. So I should have got Nate Campbell on to see what really went down as far as like that particular lead in to that fight and why Curtis Harper really ended up stepping out on at the beginning of the fight there. So I'm not sure if I'll able to get the full story on it here anytime soon though. But that's what we got going on within the next few minutes over on Fox Sports 1. So we got like a fairly full card there. Joe Joyce, Efe Ajagba is going to be in there. James DeGale's in there. And main event, Brandon Figueroa, undefeated 16-0 against Oscar Escandón. you know, a former contender for that WBC featherweight championship, where he lost to Gary Russell Jr. last year. So that's pretty much, you know, what we have out there so far. And just seeing here, I mean, the close to, you know, this gives a close to the month of September. Just looking forward to, you know, October. You know, next weekend over in Chicago, you're going to have Better BF against Colin Johnson, Jarrell Big Baby Miller against Thomas Adamek, Gavin McDonald goes up against Danny Roman for the Junior Featherweight Championship, in the main event, Jesse Vargas against Thomas DeLorme. So that's what we have right there. There is also something over in St. Petersburg that night too. So I don't know if you got word of that, Terrell. So that may be something there to check out. Just seeing here. Oh, we got also on the zone on October 7th, Inoue versus Payano and Kerr Relic versus Edward Trinowski. So I gotta make sure if I'm gonna be able to see that live. I don't know. But that's going to be – I want to see Naya Inoue in action against Juan Carlos Payano. So that's going to be fairly big. Last thing to touch on before I close out this episode. So we have a scheduled fight for the WBO Middleweight Championship in Boston, Massachusetts, between Demetrius Andrade and Billy Joe Saunders. And news earlier this week said that he had Billy Joe Saunders test positive for a substance in his system. But apparently there were two discrepancies from that positive test. Number one was that the thing that he was caught for apparently is not supposed to be tested on in competition or until the date of the fight, according to British boxing rules. But one, he's not fighting in Britain, so they wouldn't apply. So that's kind of weird. And then two, they say that the substance came from a nose spray that he was taking for a
who?
Cold or something like that. So those are the two things that they saw coming out of that. And because of that, it seems like the fight is still on between him and Demetrius Andrade over in Boston, Massachusetts, out there. So, any closing thoughts on that?
Yeah, just real quick.
Hold on, Mike. You go first, Mike.
I said it's only cheating if you get caught. Ask A. Juice and J. That.
Oh. Okay. Cool. All right, Thoreau, what you got on it?
Yeah, just real quick. So the substance was called oxylofrene, some kind of stimulant, but it's supposed to also help you with endurance and stuff like that, or whatever. So obviously they're waiting to see at Massachusetts State Athletics Commission if they're going to actually strip Saunders or not of the WBO title. But you know. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to just ignore a positive test like that. But so supposedly that if they strip Saunders, it could be possible for fighting for some kid named Cotton Dawa, something like that, or whatever. I don't know much about him. I don't know what kind of matchup he presents to Andre, things like that. But for me, seriously, I'm just saying this. If I'm Andre, I'm like, F it, license Saunders and let him fight me because I'm going to beat him anyway regardless. That's almost what I would say. Let him fight, and I'm going to whoop his ass anyway. And I'm going to whoop his ass twice for popping positive, you know. Because, like, you know, a lot of times when you're close on the edge of getting that title shot and things, so many things just happen around it to take that title shot away from you. And like I said, me personally, I was like I said, F it, give him a license, whatever. I mean, ultimately, it's not going to be up to him. We know that. It's up to the athletic commission. But it's always like me. I said, let him fight because I'm going to beat him anyway. It don't even matter what he does. But it's just funny how drugs just keep popping up over and over the last 4, 5, 6 years for major fights that we're looking forward to. Pretty funny.
Yeah, and the thing here with Billy Joe Saunders is that he kind of has a background to, you know, where, you know, not a lot of people like him, not a lot of people, you know, are, you know, in favor of what he's doing inside and outside of the ring. And so something like this, you know, kind of like makes him one of the, you know, most disliked fighters out there in the sport of boxing. Of course, we knew about the whole little incident that took place when Deontay Wilder was in the UK for Tyson Fury's fight against Pianetta. But then you follow that up with the whole little so-called prank that he did with the lady that was, you know, an addict and stuff like that. So he didn't, you know, get reprimanded for that. And now you have this come up. So if they, you know, if the state of Massachusetts ends up granting Billy Joe Saunders a license, then, yeah, I would say that Demetrius Andrade should, like, step up there and try to, you know, prove himself and beat Billy Joe Saunders thoroughly and convincingly to earn that WBO middleweight championship. But, you know, other than that, you know, I would say that, you know, Saunders is going to come in that particular fight as the probably one of the most hated fighters out there in the sport. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that's what the sport of boxing needs in order to garner a lot of attention. But here, this is like absolutely the wrong way to get it. So that's what, you know, I have on that particular matchup. So on that note, I'm going to put it into this episode of the show. You catch the next episode Sunday night, 7:30 Eastern Time. You catch the sister shows here on the Go Long Media Channel. Cohort Truth on Sports Tuesday nights, 8:30. Take This Show Football Talk Show Wednesday nights at 8:30 on the Go Long Media Channel. And you can catch this podcast on different streaming network, streaming sites. You can catch it on iTunes, on Spotify, and Google Podcasts, all of that. And like I say at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is a hit, and I can hit. Not the sand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Later.